Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:05 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is October 9th. I thought we'd kick off today by looking at the yield curve. It went inverted briefly in August, and since then has steepened by about 17 basis points. But when we see what's going on, you can see, for example, that there is the level that it just pulled back from earlier on in this month was from the lower side of that overhead trading range. If it can sustain a move back up into that level and then above the 30 basis point level, then that would break the downtrend. We're not quite there yet, so there is still a lot of speculation about what we can anticipate from the yield curve. One thing that everybody focuses on is that when you get the yield curve inverted, it acts as a lead indicator for a future recession. It's one of the clearest signals that we are late in the cycle. But what is less discussed is that it is usually when the yield curve starts to surge higher, and that it has clearly broken its previous downtrend. That's generally when the economy really does run into trouble. So what we can generally anticipate after a yield curve inversion is that the stock market does reasonably well. It starts to respond to it starts pricing in the potential for easier monetary policy. But as monetary policy gets progressively easier, then the yield curve starts to steepen, which gets everybody worried about why it is steepening. Why is it that the Federal Reserve is so interested in cutting interest rates? They don't do it voluntarily, they only do it in extremis, and therefore they have got this challenge. We can see, for example, in 2007 the yield curve just started to push back up above zero, but it was really when it went through 50 basis points that the trend was undeniable. Now we can certainly think about these sorts of factors at present, and we can also think about the fact that we're still really quite in early days, and the trend mean has not been broken yet in terms of this yield curve expansion. However, the Federal Reserve is committed at this stage to needing to create the equivalent of a standing open market facility for the repo market. Institutional prop traders are pretty much a dead breed, and the approximately $500 billion in liquidity that they had to punt around in the repo market is now 100% committed to Tier 1 capital requirements because of two pieces of legislation. The Volcker Rule got rid of the prop traders, and then also created, and then Basel II created this Tier 1, Tier 2 capital definition. And of course, conveniently, Tier 1 capital is government bonds. They literally created a market for their own securities. Banks need to maintain their capital adequacy ratios, therefore they haven't got the capital to support the repo market, and therefore the Federal Reserve has to do that. What they are suggesting they're going to do is start buying shorter term instruments. Well, if you start buying shorter term instruments, that is going to compress the yield. And if they are going to compress the yield, then without having any real effect on the outlook for the longer end of the curve, then you're going to get a steeper yield curve. I mean, that is about as simple as one might think of these kinds of market interjections. Well, the Fed's balance sheet is definitely going to start increasing at a more aggressive pace, and it has surged over the course of just the last few weeks. There's a strong likelihood they're going to have to add in anything up to between $300 and $500 billion to ensure that there is ample liquidity in the repo market, and that is a complete reversal of everything that they've been attempting to do over the course of the last 18 months, which was to try and reduce the size of the balance sheet. The one thing we have clear evidence of is that no central bank has been able to do that. And that's, I think, one of the most important characteristics. We're probably going to have to go through an acute bout of inflation before interest rates rise, and then people start getting fiscal religion again in order for central bank balance sheets to start to come back down. And we are nowhere near that right now. Well, what this suggests is that the Federal Reserve is going to be adding liquidity one way or another. They can call it quantitative easing or flatly deny that it is quantitative easing, but the net result is the same, that we're going to have a steepening yield curve. And this is actually quite a difficult thing to play from an ETF perspective. Of course, one could simply just do it by shorting, buying one and shorting the other in terms of the actual underlying bonds. But what we are starting to see is a proliferation now of instruments that are potentially going to give some kind of exposure to this this entire theme, the potential for the yield curve to steepen. Well, there is the scope too that these kinds of instruments will act as a hedge against a deleterious effect on the stock market. Now, the Wall Street today was bouncing. It was in direct response to China's gambit that they'd be willing to accept a modest trade agreement if the tariffs were no longer escalated. The market took that in the sentiment that it was delivered, and we've had an almost 1% rally in here. The Nasdaq has bounced from yesterday's lows. We're still presented with this one-month sequence of lower rally highs. I still think that we've had evidence now of significant bounces from the region of the trend mean on a number of occasions since March, and this is another one of those. When we look at some of the biggest shares, particularly Amazon, which had been right on the lower side of its range and is now trading below its trend mean, it was in positive territory today, not in a dynamic manner. It has got to do better than that in order to confirm support in the region of the lows from back in June and the upper side of that range that persisted between January and February. Then when we think about what's going on in China, well, they need to try and stem the rot in terms of the domestic economy. The A-share index, which is very acutely supported by the central government, bounced today right from the region of the trend mean. And we know, for example, that technical analysis and the use of indicators is much more prevalent in Asian countries than it is in the West. So this is a logical area where some support might start to come through. Hong Kong was in negative territory, but not in a dynamic manner. The most important thing is that it is still above the 25,000 level. The shooting of protesters in Hong Kong over the weekend could have been expected to have a deleterious effect on the stock market, and it does remain susceptible to additional selling pressure. The big question, though, is whether that 25,000 level can hold. If it can, then we can conclude that this is support building. If we get a break below that level, well, then we are in a very clear downtrend, and that would represent a clear failure in the region of a big psychological number like the round 25,000 level. Then when we think about what exactly we can anticipate from the dollar, if we're going to have an easier fiscal and monetary environment, then that will reduce some of the tailwind from the dollar. But the other point, of course, is that Europe is in a negative interest rate environment. Growth is disappointing there. They are one of the biggest victims of the trade war, because not only are tariffs being levied against Europe, but also the slowdown in China is stymieing their ability to export into that country. So that does put downward pressure on the euro, regardless of the tinkering at the edges of policy that's going on in terms of the USA. The renminbi does not look like it's going to trade back below 7, but it was in positive territory in here today. The Brazilian stock market was also in positive territory, but the real was weaker, and this weakness is, I think, rather telling that this has not been, we haven't seen any clear dynamics. This continues to look like a consolidation in favor of the dollar, and there is the clear potential that we're going to see the dollar breaking on the upside. And that is a, I think, a condition that we're seeing in a substantial number of commodity-related markets. Now, when we think about the oil price, well, it was in positive territory, but only barely in here today. This somewhat volatile market where rallies have not been sustained and neither have declines over the course of the last 5 sessions, that is representative of some indecision in the region of the lows from back in August. But the much bigger picture is that we have a slowing global economic environment, and against a background of less demand, there is plenty of supply. Nonetheless, we still have a backwardation, and I think this is one of the clearest points here. It's not so much that there is an acute volume increase, but rather that there is less demand driving this market, that even in this kind of constrained environment, there just is not enough demand to really send prices higher. Then, when we think about natural gas, it is coming back down towards this $2 level. It failed to sustain a move back above the trend mean, having broken the sequence of lower rally highs. That was a very emphatic failure. It does suggest that at least the $2 level is going to be retested. Then we'll have to see whether we see upward dynamics to confirm support in that area. But energy prices are not a headwind to global growth at present. We're certainly not getting that kind of inflationary pressure from the energy sector. And when we think about the copper price, well, it was not able to hold its rally in here yesterday and was pretty much unchanged in here today. And there's still a downward bias to trading overall. The London Metals Index, which is the six primary industrial resources and iron ore, remains in a downtrend, and it was in negative territory yesterday when it was updated. But the much broader point here is that we had a massive reaction against the prevailing trend in the third quarter of last year, and it has clearly failed to recover. The best performing of the main industrial resources has been nickel, and that has been driven more recently by the moratorium on exports from Indonesia. They want to try and build up their smelting and fabrication sectors. This is another iteration of these policies that Indonesia have been deploying for much of the last decade. That is creating a supply-constrained environment in nickel against a background where demand from battery manufacturers is still trending higher. When we think about the big battery manufacturers, Tesla was in positive territory in here today. It has now pretty much unwound most of its overextension relative to the trend mean. There, obviously, we're now in an area where there is the potential for some resistance to come through. The big question is whether it is going to be able to sustain a move back above that $250 area. If it can, then it will clearly have broken the downtrend, and we'd be back in a demand-dominated environment. On the other hand, if it fails here, then that's going to reassert the downtrend. So we really are at a rather important level here. And this is for one of the leaders in autonomous vehicles. This is one of the big promises that's been made in this bull market for technology, which has been the leading sector over the course of the last decade. We've had the revolution in terms of cloud computing. The machine learning revolution is really only just getting started, but there haven't really been big promises made about that just yet. But one of the biggest promises has been autonomous vehicles. This is something we see in every major bull market, that the promises are eventually kept, but we do have to pay particular attention to the consistency of trends, because very often the companies that give investors leverage, or at least exposure to these incredible ideas, aren't often the ones that benefit most when they're delivered. So we really are at a very pivotal point for Tesla. Google is at the upper side of its range. It hasn't quite yet been able to break on the upside, but it did reverse an earlier decline to finish in above the $1,200 area. It has bounced again from the region of the trend mean. This has been a somewhat longer and more volatile trading range overall, and that I think stands out rather very clearly on the logarithmic scale chart. But so far, it has been able to hold above the psychological $1,000 area, and as long as it is doing that, I think we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Now, when we think about what's going on in terms of the Brexit debacle, the pound was in negative territory in here today. The optimism that was expressed about the potential for a deal over the last month is starting to ebb away. Now the question is whether this 120 area is going to hold, and whether Boris Johnson will survive as PM. The UK needs an election. They need a general election to flush out the members of Parliament that are obfuscating any kind of resolution to this problem, and to give a clear mandate to the government to pursue whatever strategy they propose. So until we get that, then we're probably going to have some additional volatility. But I do think that we are getting closer to an addition to a final end to this ordeal that has been ongoing now for 3 years. The FTSE 100 was in positive territory in here today. It is at least steady around that 7,000 level, which is the upper side of the previous 16-year range. As long as it's holding that level, I think we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. What I find particularly interesting is the commonality we see in the mid-cap sectors. The FTSE 250, for example, failed now at 20,000. That does increase the potential for a push all the way back down to the lower side of the range. The dynamic of the failure was greater than the dynamic of the breakout. That suggests that we are going to see a test of the levels below 19,000. When we look at the German mid-cap sector, then we are also now testing the region of the trend mean, but it's been a broadly rangy environment over most of the last 6 months. When we look at mid caps in the USA, they're also at the lower side of their range. So generally speaking, and the way everybody describes the mid caps is that they are representative of the real economy, or the domestic economy. And what they are saying is that we've got a significant period of underperformance going on in a number of these mid-cap sectors. There is evidence of slowing economic growth just about everywhere. And the big question that is outstanding for investors is the success or otherwise of the efforts currently underway to stimulate and to ease in terms of both monetary and fiscal policy to support markets. I think considering the ranges that we're in right now, and the fact that the amplitude of these ranges is narrowing, that does suggest that the breakout, when it comes, is going to be emphatic. There is still the potential that it could be on the upside, but nonetheless, we do know where stops are being put as people grow impatient with this ranging phase. And when we think about the gold price, it is steady around the $1,500 area. So far, it has been holding this level really rather well over the course of the last 6 weeks. It is allowing the overextension relative to the trend mean to be unwound gradually, and it is down now to approximately $90, considering that when it peaked around $1,550, then the gap was greater than $200. We've had a meaningful unwinding of the overextension, but it's still not quite done yet. Quite often, when you get a modest pace of mean reversion, it can often finally end with a swifter pace of mean reversion, and that generally provides buying opportunities. Gold, however, is also very volatile, so I think that has to also figure into how people are thinking about it. And if gold is volatile, silver is even more volatile. It has bounced from the $17 level. It did not hold its highs in here today. That suggests that we may be in for some additional volatility. There will obviously be people looking at the $16 area because it represents the region of the trend mean. I've already initiated a long because I think that there's a fighting chance that silver has probably put in its low, but there is no real evidence to support that claim just yet, other than the fact that I do think that precious metals are back in a new bull market. I think silver is due to play catch up with gold. When we look at the long-term chart, $20 represents the upper side of the long base formation. So we are getting some consolidation now below that $20 area. I'm not especially worried about whether the low is at $17 or $16, but rather that if this is a new bull market, what we can anticipate is that the surprises, when they come, will be on the upside. And that's equally true of platinum, which is even less liquid than the silver price, and it was in positive territory in here today. It's also the one precious metal that has already unwound the vast majority of its overextension relative to the trend mean. The very real prospect that we are going to see at least one government and potentially more experiment with modern monetary theory, that is one of the strongest tailwinds for any argument for holding fixed assets. And of course, the precious metals are among those. Palladium remains the clear leader, and it is consolidating above the $1,600 area. I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.